Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here, The Tom Woods Show.
My new book, Diary of a Psychosis, is out. It's the most lively, devastating, baseball bat to the throat takedown of what the public health establishment did in 2020 and beyond that you can imagine. It's my first book in 9 years, and you're going to love it. Check it out at diaryofcovid.com. And if you've already bought it, make sure also to visit diaryofcovid.com so you can claim your free bonuses, including my free companion volume, Collateral Damage, a collection of stories from real people who suffered under the restrictions. They weren't allowed to tell their stories at the time, but every one of them told me, "We just want to be heard." Check it all out at diaryofcovid.com. Hey everybody, welcome to the Tom Woods Show. This is episode 2459, and I'm delighted to be joined today by Kim Iverson, host of The Kim Iverson Show, which is hosted exclusively on, as I was telling you before, Rhymes with Humble. I don't know if I'm allowed to say it on YouTube, but yeah. I just had a chance to talk with her the other day on her show, and now I am reciprocated. She didn't ask for this. Nobody asked to be on the Tom Woods Show. You get recruited to be on here. But I'm really glad to have a chance to talk to you. Well, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And yeah, my show is also available on YouTube, but just in clips. I don't put the full show there. I put it on the place that rhymes with humble. That gets the full show.
I think that's a smart move. I mean, mm-hmm. I wouldn't rule out taking that path myself one day. So let's talk about you. I guess I became aware of you because of Twitter, because I would see your tweets. I would see clips of your videos. And I began to wonder about you. And then I found that you didn't always have the exact, precise collection of opinions that they've grouped us into having. So like, for instance, if you believe that the minimum wage, let's say, should be $15 an hour, there is no particular reason that you should also believe in society-wide lockdowns. There's no reason that should go together. But yet, right. In the minds of 99% of the public, it does go together. And I couldn't quite get that. But you seem like an independent person who may have come from a more, let's say, traditionally left background. Am I right about that?
Yeah, I would say, well, you know, my background is so mixed, honestly. And I think that's why I am as independent as I am with my viewpoints. And I don't really have a side because I grew up in really ultra-conservative Idaho. Mm. So I grew up around, everyone around me was a Republican. Everyone around me was right-wing for the most part. But I did grow up with a Democrat family in Idaho. So we were outliers. We were always different than everyone around us, always taking a slightly different political position. But I would say when I was really young, I was kind of an activist, like an environmental activist. I actually wrote an anti-deforestation bill when I was, well, I proposed anti-deforestation legislation when I was 11 years old. I was like one of the original Sunrise, you know, before Sunrise Kids were a thing. I was like the original,
wow.
The original Sunrise Kid. Yeah, and that ended up coming with some consequences that I found out later on after September 11th that I was on a terrorist watch list. Now, I can't confirm that that's exactly why I was on, but I don't know why else I would have been on, except for the fact that in the early 90s, if you were part of the environmental movement at all, you were considered a terrorist. That was considered, it was terrorism to want to recycle and not chop down trees at that time. And
how the definition has changed.
Yeah, right. Well, at that time, there were a lot of activists, environmental activists like Earth First, and they were chaining themselves to trees to prevent right. deforestation and stuff. So I think they just kind of thought anybody who had any sort of environmental, and I was just an 11-year-old that was just concerned thinking, it's very similar to what we hear today, to be honest with you, where we hear today like, oh no, the climate is changing and it's disaster and doom is coming, right? Like we hear this all the time, like disaster and doom. Well, when I was a kid, that was the same thing. It was disaster and doom is coming if we don't stop the harm that's happening to our planet. And so I was like, well, then we better do something. And I wanted to do something about that. Of course, now fast forward years later and I'm like, okay, I've heard this story before, you know?
Yeah.
Same story, same narrative. But I would say that I was more left. But I was also very religious and everybody around me, I was Mormon for a long time and everybody around me was Republican. But then, you know, my mom's side of the family's from Vietnam. They're refugees from Vietnam. They live in California in Los Angeles, where I am, Orange County, where I live now. But they were Republicans, right? So they like fully against communism. Obviously, that's what they fled. And so I think I just grew up mixed up with like a variety of opinions. But I would say when I got into talking politically, when I started doing my show back in early 2019, I want to say, I definitely consider myself a progressive. A progressive. I don't anymore. That's the long answer for that question. Sorry.
Wow. Okay. Because I could imagine somebody saying that maybe I'm a more consistent progressive than the people who use that term today. Because, by the way, we have this argument all the time among conservatives and libertarians. You're not a real conservative. You're not a real libertarian. So I always wonder if the progressives have the same thing.
Well, you know, progressives, I think like any group of people, when you slap a label on them, nobody really knows the Puritan, you know, who's the Puritan libertarian? Yeah. Who's the Puritan progressive, right? So I called myself a progressive for a really long time until the pandemic hit. And then I just was like, I guess I'm not a progressive anymore because now we just are not aligned on more and more things. And it's becoming really, really clear that I'm just not aligned with the people that I thought I was aligned with. I thought I was a progressive because I believe in Medicare for all. And I liked Bernie Sanders for president. I wanted to end wars. I thought that was a leftist position. It turns out that's not, is it? So I considered myself a progressive, but then as time has gone on, I've become politically homeless, which a lot of people have, where if you take a stance that's not in line with the groupthink, even though I believe I have very consistent viewpoints, I think all of my viewpoints are incredibly consistent. And I actually admire others who have really consistent viewpoints, even if our viewpoints are entirely opposite. At least they're consistent in why they think the way they think and the reasoning. I can understand and appreciate that. But progressives, yeah, I definitely do not. Now, you know, people say, oh, Kim's on the right, right? Because after COVID, it was suddenly, and in the progressive circles, that was a real shock for me because the people that I aligned with, the people that I agreed with on so many things, when the pandemic came along, from the beginning, I was not okay with any of it, from the very beginning. And I thought that would be the stance of all of my other fellow progressives. I thought other progressives would say, we can't lock down the economy. I mean, how are people going to survive? Like, we can't do these mandates. Like, that's what I genuinely believed. I would not be on an island by myself. And I was very shocked to find that I was on an island by myself. Very shocked to figure that. And shocked that Sweden, which had been like this progressive dream. And then I was looking at Sweden like, yes, this is exactly the route I would have taken if I were in charge. And suddenly that was considered libertarian. Sweden was like suddenly libertarian.
I can very much sympathize with your situation. And I think what's going on in part is that from the beginning of progressivism, like 100 years ago, there was a very, very heavy strain in it of, we need the management of society by experts. And you can read this in early issues of the New Republic. I mean, they're in effect saying that the mass of citizens are stupid rubes. And so we need experts to guide them and to really kind of manage society. And so we got that in the form of Anthony Fauci and all these other people. We got the experts running society. And I think there was enough of that strain among progressives today that they thought, well, if you don't support Anthony Fauci, you're obviously an opponent of science and of wise management of society and this and that. And I think that overwhelmed the progressive instinct to stick up for the little guy, which I do believe is sincere with most progressives. They want to stick up for the little guy. But how are you going to do it? I mean, I remember I had a friend. He came to a very, very unfortunate end. His life ended very prematurely about a year ago. But I had a friend who ran a philanthropic enterprise. It's an mobile app called DonorSee. And the idea is that in contrast to the large philanthropic organizations, you don't know where your money's going. The idea is that a donor could see the results of the donation. So he would put together a lot of little micro causes, like help this person to see for the first time, or help this person to hear. And then you would get a video clip of this happening, or photos of these sorts of things. It's an amazing thing, and it's still around. He lived in Malawi, the poorest country in the world, for 3 years. And he came on my show. One of the times he was on, was he was absolutely indignant about the way the public health authorities of the world were absolutely disregarding the needs of the developing world. And he said that in Malawi, where they have a dollar a day to get through the day and eat and survive to the next day, if you lock them down, that means death for them. And he said what was interesting was nobody read this in the Western press, but in Malawi, the people were smart enough to do the math And they rose up and said, there's not going to be any lockdown in Malawi. You can forget that. And they didn't have it. But yeah, all the, I mean, you want to talk about the poor in the U.S., they suffered enough. But imagine locking the third world down.
No, it was terrible. And that is exactly, I was very against that. And I was very shocked to find that my fellow progressives at the time were all for it. And it was selfish. It was selfish for them to be, as we sit here in our studios, in our laptops, getting our food delivered from Uber Eats.
Yeah.
I mean, how selfish do you need to be? You know, and I don't know if just many of them come from privilege. I mean, I came from a family that was scrappy. I mean, my family were refugees. They came here and we lived all together in a house, and my family literally scrubs feet to make living. So I don't know if there's just like a lack of, or just, you know, when people, well, I mean, and of course this is not the case because there's plenty of people with very different backgrounds than mine who are also very much against the lockdowns for other reasons. But in my mind, it was just such a selfish thing to say, oh, we have to lock down so that what? So that I can stay safe and I can survive. But then what about all these other people? And it was just disgusting to me to see these women come and delivering me my Uber Eats, right? And their kids were in the back seat of the car because they didn't have anywhere to take the kids. The schools were locked down because selfish people believed that what would happen? That what could these people do that had to make ends meet? What were they going to do with their children all day? They were going to just sit at home and have the privilege of being able to educate their kids as stay-at-home moms without any money to feed their children. That wasn't their priority. So I was just disgusted by the whole thing from the beginning. I did entire segments like pleading with people because I knew my audience. At that time, I had built a progressive audience and they were watching a lot of those progressive shows. And I did these pleading videos where I would say, do you not understand the economy is not Wall Street? That is not the economy. The economy is mom and pop shops. That's the economy. And we are slowly, when you go back in time from around World War I, it was like 80% or 90% of all the businesses out there were mom and pop shops. And then as we hit World War II, it kind of got to like 60% or something. And then it's just dwindled and dwindled and dwindled. And now corporations, big corporations are the behemoths. They take up everything. And mom and pop shops are just a small portion. And I knew that the pandemic and shutting them down would only dwindle that number even lower. And when we're all at the behest of these big corporations, we don't have any freedom. We don't have choices. They own everything. And if they own everything, what control do we have? We don't have a real true free market in that situation. And so, but you know, there, I guess I was a libertarian in that moment. So.
Well, I have to say before we go on, I like how you reframed it by saying that the lockdowners are the selfish ones. I try to do the same thing. They're the selfish ones. And not to mention, I always felt like the natural order of things is that parents sacrifice for their children, not the other way around.
Right.
I have five girls. And I actually did become ill in summer of 2021. And I had, it's hard to believe a genial guy like me would have enemies, Kim, but I do. And a few of the especially nasty ones were, I wouldn't say dancing on my grave because I wasn't dead, but they were almost delighted that I was sick. And they were saying, well, now maybe Tom will change his mind. And I came out and I said, not one kid should have missed one basketball practice for me. I am absolutely unchanged by any of this. So you must have realized early on, so obviously you realize that you're in a distinct minority, but there were a handful of people who thought the way you did and who came to these conclusions about these measures. Who were the first people you started to realize, wait a minute, they're kind of talking like me?
It's honestly, it was a long time for me before anybody, because I was in a bubble, right? We all kind of tend to be in our own political little bubbles with the types of people that we align with. And I was in that progressive bubble. So I was alone. I was like totally alone for a long time. Eventually, some of the others started to come around. Once the talk of vaccine mandates came about, then there was a shift in some of the progressives. And I would say that like a third of them started to say, wait a minute, you know, I'm not into that. Like I was willing to do the 2 weeks to stop the spread, which ended up being, you know, 6 months or whatever, but I'm not willing to go. This is like another level that I'm not willing to do. So there was a period of time. I don't know. I mean, I have to say, because, you know, I don't know if you know this, because you said that you just knew me from Twitter, but I was the host. I was the main host of Rising, The Hills Rising.
I did read that. Yes.
Yeah. So I took over after Crystal Ball and Sagar and Jetty. They were hosting the show for a long time. They left to go on their own. And I ended up being, there was a lot of other hosts that kind of, they did kind of this like circle of kind of trying a bunch of hosts out. Anyway, I ended up being really the main host of Rising. And the segments I did on Rising, they're called Radars, and they would hit like 2 million views on YouTube, which is, for one, I knew that my opinion was not, I wasn't alone in my opinion. It was just that the opinion was being suppressed by the mainstream media. They just weren't showcasing anybody who had that opinion. Mm. And I would get on there and I would be sitting, you know, next to, I was at that time, again, it'd been kind of a rotating cast of other hosts, but Ryan Grimm was one of them. And what's her name? She's now a co-host of The View. She's like the conservative on The View. I forgot her name, Alyssa or something. Alyssa, I think, is her name. Anyway, you know, they're sitting there, and this was in August of 2020 or 2021. So after they had already started rolling out the vaccine, and I genuinely believed that everybody was reading the science. I really thought everybody was reading that. I was like so naive, right?
I thought so. And why wouldn't you think so?
I mean, that's what I really thought everybody was reading, especially journalists. I figured that these guys are reading the science. So we were sitting there in an episode, and it's like this classic episode where I'm in between the two of them. I'm the center host. And I said, well, why are we even talking about mandates? I mean, we know the vaccine doesn't stop the spread. And I said it just point blank, like it doesn't stop the spread. We knew this data because Israel had given out the doses way earlier. They did like a deal with Pfizer where they got the doses early for data in exchange for data. So we had the data. And I was watching those, the rollout. And in Israel, they were already on the third dose at that point. We hadn't even started. We were still on dose one and they were on dose three because they realized the first two doses didn't stop the spread. So I'm sitting there like, well, this is common knowledge. We all know that the vaccine doesn't stop the spread. And these two, I mean, I got attacked. They suddenly, you know, Alyssa goes, whoa, 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 whoa. And Ryan starts laughing. And these two are just like, ah, yes, it does stop the spread, you vaccine deny. I mean, it was just like.
That's insane. But I'm sure they sent you a heartfelt apology later.
Oh, yeah, right. Day after day after day, I battled it out in front of millions of people, literally, on Rising, doing the dirty work, battling it out, giving them the data, and getting ridiculed by my co-hosts and being just pummeled. My co-hosts behind my back would go to management. They'd try to get me fired. They were saying that I was some kind of a denier, that I was insane. But, you know, ultimately, luckily for me, my numbers were huge there. And so the management only cared about the number. They cared about ratings. And my ratings were just, I was trouncing my co-hosts in that. But I mean, it was day after day, battle after battle. So I don't know. I was really alone for a really long time, sitting there on the stage, like just, you know, there was epic. I mean, there's so many video clips out there of like these epic back and forths where I'm sitting there like, no. There was like a study that I showed was of Duke, and they ended up with like 107 cases of COVID. And they were like, oh no, you know, and all of them but three were vaccinated. And I got into a battle with my co-host on air, and he was like, no, all of them were unvaccinated except for three. And I was like, no, all of them were vaccinated except for three. And he battled that out for me. And then he goes, producers, check that, fact check it. And on air, because they couldn't talk, obviously the producers couldn't be heard on air, but they could change the teleprompter. So they wrote on the teleprompter, like, update to, you know, and then they said, yes, it was 105 or 104 of the COVID cases were fully vaccinated students and only three. And he had to read that live to his embarrassment. I mean, it's just, it was insane.
Well, the thing is, I bet up until this point, you probably kind of enjoyed the work you did. And then after that, I bet you came to dread it.
Yeah, I mean, I had to suit up for battle every day because it wasn't just me in that situation. You know, on my own show, I could just go on and talk and talk and nobody battles me, nobody pushes back. But in that situation, I not only had one person pushing back, but both people pushing back on me. And I had to battle them you know, trying to smear me as a conspiracy theorist. I mean, I got written about by the Daily Beast a couple of times, calling me a conspiracy theorist. In the end, I slowly started converting them over to my side because they just couldn't deny the data. After a while, you know, once you get like four doses of this thing, at some point you have to just admit it doesn't stop the spread, right? By the way, you can say that on YouTube. That is
They admit that now, yes.
Yeah, we can say it doesn't stop the spread. So, right, but for a while we couldn't. But, well, actually they let me all on the hills rising for that whole time. I was allowed to say that. There wasn't ever really a block on that. But, I mean, it was just hard. I had to suit up for battle every day. And anyway, my time at Rising, where I gained a lot of following from Rising, my time came to an end very suddenly one day. when, again, I was their main host. There was no dispute on that. They had booked Anthony Fauci to be interviewed on Rising, and they would not let me interview Anthony Fauci.
Oh, wow.
They shoved aside their main host, told me that I would have to basically exit the studio and that my other hosts, a fill-in host and one of the main hosts would be interviewing Anthony Fauci. And that was it for me. I was like, you guys do not get to make gobs of money off of me, tons of views off of me, off of this particular topic. And then on top of that, you don't let me grill the one man who has caused all of this for all of us. Forget it. I'm out. I'm done. And I quit.
Wow, that is extraordinary. And it also, doesn't it say something about their lack of confidence in Fauci himself? Why shouldn't Fauci be able to handle you with no problem?
Yeah, the issue was actually Fauci would not let me interview him. So he was pushing back. His team didn't want me on the interview. And The Hill accepted that. And I told The Hill that was unacceptable, that what they should have done was pushed back at Fauci's team and said, no, Kim is there. Kim's our main host. And that's the end of the either that or don't do it. And then if he would have backed out, if he was a pansy ass and wasn't going to be there, then we could have talked about that and probably got a ton of views on that one segment. Instead, they interviewed Anthony Fauci without me. The interview got very few views because I wasn't on it. Had I been on that interviewing Fauci, I guarantee it would have gotten a few million views for them. It instead got like 40,000 views when my radars were typically 300,000, 400,000, 500,000 at the minimum, up to 2 million. So they got no views out of it, you know, really in proportion. And they lost me at that same time for Fauci, for a stupid Fauci interview where he said nothing of anything, of any value. Had they just said, no, Fauci, Kim's on the interviewer, she's our main host, so that's it. We're not cutting out the main host. And if he would have said no, we would have done a segment on that. And I guarantee you, we would have gotten tons of views on that one segment. I mean, yeah. They just lost money. They lost the host. They lost credibility. It was a mess. It was a mess. And I begged them to not do it. After, you know, they kicked me out of the studio all day. I begged them. I texted all the producers and I said, you guys, at the minimum, do not air this. Do not go forward with this. You will leave me with no choice but to quit because I told my audience I was only sitting here in mainstream media so as long as I wasn't censored. And you guys have now censored me. So that being said, I cannot be here anymore because I made a promise to my viewers. And you guys are only hurting yourselves. Like, this isn't a good thing. So anyway, they went forward with it and that's the end of that.
So you went out into the unknown?
I took a little break and then the platform that rhymes with humble came to me and said, hey, why don't you, you know, pick back up and restart? Because I was doing my own independent show before I joined The Hills Rising. It's just that when I joined The Hills Rising, I still had my other show. I just wasn't doing much on it because I was so exhausted every day hosting the full-time Rising show. But I still had that. I still had the channel and everything. And so I just kind of kicked it back in and then moved it. And now I do the daily stream. But yeah, it was a real bummer, that situation. So I don't know. You know, I don't know when people woke up around me because I just had been in I've been in like pretty much during the whole pandemic nearly alone, battling it out on all fronts, I guess. Sadly.
Hey, everybody, you know, I'm always trying to find ideas for how you can make the most of your dead time. We're given only so much time in this life, and let's make the best use of it we can. Well, I've got another way for you to put that dead time to good use, and that is with free online courses from Hillsdale College. Hillsdale College is where our old friend Brad Berzer, frequent guest on the Tom Woods Show, teaches. Hillsdale College is offering more than 40 free online courses in the most important and enduring subjects. You can learn about the works of C.S. Lewis, the stories in the Book of Genesis, the meaning of the U.S. Constitution, the rise and fall of the Roman Republic, or the history of the ancient Christian church with Hillsdale College's online courses, all available for free. That's right, for free. I personally recommend you sign up for C.S. Lewis on Christianity. In this 7-lecture course, you'll examine some of Lewis's classic works, including Mere Christianity, The Screwtape Letters, The Abolition of Man, to see what Lewis had to say about scripture, prayer, suffering, joy, heaven, and hell. The course is self-paced, so you can start whenever and wherever. Enroll now in C.S. Lewis and Christianity to discover Lewis's core lessons regarding the truth and goodness of the Christian faith and how to apply those lessons to your life. Go right now to hillsdale.edu/woods to enroll. There's no cost, and it's easy to get started. That's hillsdale.edu/woods to register. hillsdale.edu/woods. Well, so I can't help dwelling a bit on this point that you don't think of yourself as a progressive anymore. Wouldn't it have been possible for you to say, I'm a progressive, except I disagree with progressives on COVID? Did you realize that maybe there was indeed something more than just that?
Yeah, I disagree with them on a lot. And it just kind of slowly became more and more evident that we disagree on almost everything now. So, I mean, now it was just that COVID was where I'd finally, like, it was really blatant. There was definitely, just like there is in the libertarian circles, there's infighting, right? There was always progressive infighting. But I was still a progressive. They were still progressives. We might not agree on a lot of things, but we would still, like, you know, maybe there were some that would be like, well, I'm more progressive than that person. Okay, fine, whatever. But that's kind of like in any, Republicans have that, Democrats have that, everybody has that. It was just really more obvious, I think, that I was just really no longer a progressive, that we just really were battling on too many fronts, too often, too many subjects. And really, progressives were the type that they were just like, Donald Trump is the worst thing in the world. And I had gone on several debates saying, actually, I think Joe Biden will be worse than Donald Trump as president. I will not vote for Joe Biden. I do think he would absolutely be worse. There was one, do you know the guy Destiny? Are you familiar with him?
Yes.
So I debated Destiny and he literally laughed at me and mocked me and used this clip for a long time circulating around me saying Joe Biden is worse than Donald Trump because he will lead us into more wars, mark my word.
You know what? You got to bet the money from now on.
I know,
right? Because you keep being right.
I got to start betting money, right? And then said they mocked me and say, oh, she believes this. Oh, how ridiculous. And here we are, right?
Well, you know, I want to ask you a completely unrelated question just out of curiosity, because I've always wanted to ask like Vietnamese refugees who came to the U.S. this question. Obviously, Vietnamese refugees who come to the U.S., in a sense, resemble Cuban refugees in that
right. They
have an ideological motivation. But at the same time, though, the difference between Cuba and Vietnam is that the U.S. dropped an awful lot of bombs on the Vietnamese. And, you know, you could make an argument that that war was not carried out as it ought to have been, if at all. And so I always wondered, aren't any of the Vietnamese people at all unhappy with the U.S. for at least some of the collateral damage that was done during the war? What was your parents' feeling about that?
Never brought it up, to be honest. Like, they don't talk about it. Yeah, there is no real animosity. I have not seen or heard. Now, that might be different in Vietnam. I've never been back, so I don't know. I have family there. Half of my family stayed, and the other half came here. We don't really talk about politics. You know, when I talk to my cousins over there, and I try to get into politics, they kind of shut it down, because they are still a communist country, and their government is not kind to like political, you know, they'd worry. They just say, well, I don't want to get in trouble. The government's probably watching this conversation, so I don't want to talk anymore or whatever. I mean, I guess that happens here too now, but they're more worried about it. So we don't really talk about it. So I do think there's probably a different sentiment over there, would be my guess about America. But here, the refugees are extremely pro-America and love America and love being Republican. And my family, it was so weird during COVID because Asian culture is very compliant. The culture is compliant. The culture is to work together as a team. That's not a communism thing. Like, people look at China and think, oh, that's communist. No, that's just actually Asian culture. So they were the most compliant when it came to vaccine mandates and mask mandates. Like, in all of California, it was like Westminster, which is Little Saigon, that had the highest rates, and the Chinese areas, right, that had the highest rates of vaccine uptake, like 85 or 89% of the population got vaccinated. Plus, they were all wearing masks. But they were also the ones, the Vietnamese community, which are Republicans, were also the ones in the streets marching, protesting against lockdowns. Like, they're out there like, no lockdown, no lockdown. But they were fine with like choosing to comply with the masking and the vaccines.
That's a very interesting balancing act.
Yeah, but they did it.
That they did. Huh.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't hear anything negative at all. I mean, they're so happy.
Okay, I was curious about that. Do you feel now, this is kind of a hackneyed phrase, I guess, but politically homeless, as they say?
Totally, yeah, yeah. Well, yes, right? I don't fit into a box, but I think now that's most of us. So I don't feel homeless. I feel like I'm in a big crowd, you know? there's like a ton of us. It's Woodstock, right? Like we're all here together, independent and free. And so I actually think that I'm one of the major. I'm one in the of many. You know, I'm in the majority now.
Yeah. The question is anyone going to fill this void? Because as you say, there's a huge void. Everybody's unhappy, and we're waiting to see if anybody comes along. Now, RFK Jr. came along, and some people were happy with some of the things he said, but he's not an entirely satisfactory answer either. But it's still, I still think it's a net positive, despite his flaws, that he came out and is doing what he's doing, because anytime somebody breaks out of this duopoly, it slightly liberates people from their mental prisons.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, like, I'm super disappointed in his stance on Israel. Very disappointed. But at the same time, they're all like that. He's just like more of the same when it comes at one subject. What's disappointing about it, though, is I thought he would be not more of the same on anything. I thought the whole point of his candidacy was, I'm breaking the mold, I'm different, I'm independent. But on this one, he's just right in line with everybody else for whatever reason that might be. You know, I've got my suspicions all over the place on that one. But when I look at it logically, when I look at all the candidates, he's really no different than Joe Biden's stance or even Donald Trump's stance, or, you know, they all have the same stance on that one particular subject. So then, yeah, it's a net positive when you look at his other stances on the rest of the subjects and then see that he's out there now advocating for freeing Julian Assange, and because we should know about our government's war crimes. So I think that, yeah, probably a net positive. And I think many of us would like to see I don't know if there's going to be anybody filling the void, if there's going to be an entity filling the void, like a new political party. I think now people are just starting to become more independent. And I think it's a good thing for people to say, this time I'll vote Libertarian, next time I'll vote Democrat, like depending on who the person is and what they stand for, the individual politician, right? Like the next time I'll vote Green. I mean, Jill Stein has got a lot of positions that I think a lot of people would be very surprised at. I interviewed her, and I could tell you there were a lot of, you know, most people that are like Libertarian or right-winger would be like, no way to Jill Stein. She's a Green Partier. A lot of people watched that interview and walked away. A bunch of Libertarians walked away and said, wait a minute, I might consider Jill Stein. She sounded more Libertarian to me than a lot of other Libertarians. I mean, I think it just really, now I think people are starting to maybe look at the candidates individually, and that might be the path forward.
When you finally decided in your mind that this is not really where I belong, namely in progressivism, did you at that point start to get to know people you might, understandably enough, you might have dismissed before? Did you find that you were talking to people who were a little bit more different from yourself, and that they actually, some of them turned out to be not so bad?
Well, the reason why I squabbled with so many progressives, even when I was still before COVID and when I was still like labeled a progressive, was because I was never the type that said, I'm not going to talk to that person because they're right wing. Or I've always been open to anybody and any ideas. And then I would get labeled by my fellow progressives at the time as being really a right winger. You know, like, oh, she's really just a right winger. She's hiding it because look, she's going on Tim Pool's show or something, you know, something kind of insane. And in my mind, it was like, why not talk to everybody? I mean, we might politically disagree, but that's okay. We debate it. You know, that's what America's supposed to be about. We're supposed to have different ideas and we're supposed to debate those ideas. And sometimes those debates make us shift. And even if we don't shift right there in that moment, because we're holding our ground in our debate, we do change. We have internal kind of, well, I didn't see it from that perspective. That person brought up a really good point. Maybe, that's what it's all supposed to be about. So I was always open to talking to everybody. I always ran in kind of a strong mix of progressives and libertarians, but very, very few, I have to be honest, very, very few establishment. I mean, establishment Democrats would never talk to me because that's how they are. They like, and we don't talk to... And actually, establishment Republicans too. Lately, establishment Republicans have treated me the same way that establishment Democrats did. Early on, when I was doing segments against Nancy Pelosi, like doing critical pieces on Democrats, Democrats shunned me. But now it's actually establishment, like Ron DeSantis, huge disappointment. And now I hate that guy. Like he has put like embargoes on my show, won't let people from his staff on my show specifically.
Wow.
Because, yeah, like he's actually halted any communication with my show. because of my stance on Israel.
Wow. That's crazy. There are a lot of people who share your opinions on Israel.
Right. But apparently Ron DeSantis does not. And he has made sure, you know, he's a censorship guy. I mean, he's, as much as he claims to be Mr. Free This, and I liked DeSantis. I was all in on him. I was really thinking he would be the answer in a lot of ways, especially during the pandemic. I liked him a lot. And now, I'm mad. I mean, hate is a strong word, but I'm really angry because I am angry personally. I feel personally attacked that he personally would halt certain guests from being on my show because of his desire to censor me. So forget him.
Yeah. And I was afraid that if he ran for president, everything that was bad about him that I wasn't sure, maybe I was imagining, would come to the fore. And I think, unfortunately, that's what happened. And yet there's still, as somebody who lives in Florida, and I was able to have a peaceful, normal life for my 5 kids during that time, it's still hard for me not to feel some degree of gratitude to him for standing up to it. But of course, there are definitely parts that, shall we say, are disappointing. I was very happy about his choice for Florida Surgeon General, by the way, who, oh my gosh, if you look at the Wikipedia entry for Joseph Latipo, it starts off by saying, Joseph Latipo, he's the Surgeon General of Florida, but he believes in a whole bunch of crazy conspiracy theories about COVID. Like, that was, like, they can't even stop for 3 seconds to write a professional background of the guy. So when I had him on my show, I said, your Wikipedia entry is designed to scare me away from you, but instead I read it and I say, sounds like a great guy.
When was the last time you had him on your show?
Oh, probably 8 months.
8 months, yeah. So you haven't tried to have him on your show since the...
Oh, no, I have not.
Okay. He's been on my show a couple of times until recently.
Wow. I don't know if maybe I'm a small potato. They don't make note of me. I'm under the radar. Nobody knows. There's only one way to know us, to test it out.
Yeah, ask, see what happens. I mean, now his campaign is, DeSantis' campaign's over.
Yeah.
But I would be curious, but DeSantis is still the governor of Florida, right? People still work for him, so.
Wow. Well, we will see. Now I'm dying to know. Now I feel like just coming up with some excuse to get, get somebody on.
Love him. I mean, I love Latipo. I just adore his work. In fact, I was reading him before he ever became the Surgeon General or anything. I felt like Ron DeSantis was, like, his team was like following my Twitter feed or something, because, or even my show, because I had brought up Latipo when he was unknown. He was here in Los Angeles and he had just written a couple of articles for the Wall Street Journal that I'd happened on, and I was reading them thinking, this guy's the smartest guy on the planet. I mean, I just really was I said he was my spirit animal. I mean, I put that out there on Twitter back in way before he was ever on the radar of Ron DeSantis. And I just absolutely love Dr. Latipo. Thought he was brilliant during the pandemic, right on the money. And I was thrilled to see that he ended up getting that Surgeon General job in Florida. And I just thought, wow, here's the guy that nobody, he's not one of the big names in COVID that people were following, like Bhattacharya and Malone. And, there's a lot of big names out there, but I was hot on Latipo and reading his articles and just thinking the guy was brilliant. And then sure enough, the next thing, he was Florida Surgeon General. I'd done a couple of pieces on him on my show and nobody knew who he was. And so I take full credit, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, good for you. And you never know. I mean, there was one time where I used a particular turn of phrase in my daily newsletter, and I got a lot more subscribers during COVID because I was covering this thing like crazy, and I had just the right amount of analysis plus sarcasm that people were looking for. And I would use a particular turn of phrase, and the next day, DeSantis would use that turn of phrase. And I would think,
yeah, so maybe.
Is somebody in his office, reading that?
All right, probably.
You never know. Maybe you got Latipo in and I got those phrases in his mouth. Who knows,
I think we did. I think we should take all the credit.
Why not? He's apparently not coming on the show to contradict us. So,
no.
All right. Yeah. Leave you with this. Here's the toughest question of all. Tell me a couple of things about the future that make you feel optimistic and a couple that make you feel pessimistic.
Oh, boy, that is a hard question. What makes me feel optimistic?
Oh, so the optimistic is the hard part, I would think. So start with the hard one, the easy one then. What's horrible? Tell me that.
Well, I mean, obviously what's horrible is, the horrible thing is that we can't seem to get as many of us who have been rising up as anti-war voices, we still can't seem to get a grapple on that. you know, the monster, the military industrial complex monster. The thing that really scares me the most is we have obviously a dying empire. And when an empire is dying, it's just it's like, I used to be a lifeguard. And the one thing they taught us when I was a lifeguard as a teenager and through college was like, you go and try to rescue somebody who's drowning, they will try to take you down with them because they're scrambling, you know, they're trying to claw their way to air. And so they will push you down the water while they're clawing their way to air and then you both drown. And that's like a real legitimate concern in lifeguarding. So they teach you a bunch of ways to protect yourself from also drowning with the drowning victim. And I feel like we're the lifeguard, those of us that are like anti-war almost and the rest of the world, those of us who've woken up to the atrocities of the military-industrial complex and how bought off our political machine is, we try to rescue it and they are just clawing and they are pushing us and they're just trying to drown us. But in their case, very intentionally, a drowning victim is not intentionally trying to kill you, but I think they are trying to genuinely squash us. So that's like my pessimism is I worry about anybody who's desperate. I worry about the methods they'll go to in those times of desperation. So that's really scary to me. The positive? Really going to make me do this? No.
I can give you a hint if you need one.
Okay, give me a hint. What do you think's positive?
The Kim Iverson show is a hint.
Oh, well, I mean, for sure, we are living now. The good thing is we're living in an era where we are able to have these independent shows, right? We're able to get our voices out there. We're able to talk more. We're not just bound by the establishment media machine. There's more of us voices, I think, rising. And the reason why we're so threatening is because it's becoming obvious that many, many people agree with us. And if they hear us, they agree with us even more, that we make more sense than the establishment media and the parroting of the political machine in Washington, you know? So I think there is the hope that as long, again, though, they're the drowning victims, so they're trying to push us and drown us too. And they're doing a lot of things to try to censor us and squash us and label us as conspiracy theorists, you know, but we are trying our best, right, to get out there and get the message out there and more voices and make that change. So I guess that is a positive.
Yeah, that is. I mean, it wouldn't be possible for you and I to be doing what we're doing. And there are people who are much bigger than either of us, like Joe Rogan.
Right.
He's not right on everything, but he's got an open mind and a big platform and a willingness to talk.
Yeah,
and
awesome.
In this day and age, that's all I ask.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess there's some positive there. There's some positive there.
All right, so everybody check out the Kim Iverson Show. Give us your website.
Just thekimiversonshow.com. That'll take you where you need to be in the show's Monday through Friday, 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern.
Iverson. So Kim
Iverson
Show.
Yeah, and like today's show, for example, I broke down the big, massive COVID study that just came out. And I broke it down piece by piece so people can watch that and kind of learn from that massive. It was 99 million people over 99 million people were involved in the largest COVID vaccine study that has been peer reviewed and published. And so I went through a piece that, you know, bit by bit on my show today.
All right. Sounds excellent. Well, I'll have a link in the description of the video, also on the show notes page. So thank you very much, Kim Iverson. I've really enjoyed having a chance to get to know you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
And thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.